The day after tomorrow, the Senate Judiciary Committee votes on whether White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez becomes attorney general. He is expected to win, but critics are bothered by a memo he wrote for the president about the use of harsh interrogation techniques, even torture, according to some, for suspected terrorists. Day to Day's Eric Weiner has been looking at some current thinking on the use of torture in intelligence gathering.
There's something called the ticking bomb scenario, and it gets to the very heart of the debate over torture. It goes like this. A terrorist group plans to detonate a bomb, maybe even a nuclear bomb, somewhere in the United States. Federal agents capture one of the terrorists. He knows where the bomb is, but he's not talking. What do you do? Michael Levin is a professor at City College of New York.
It seems to me obvious that you have to inflict pain to get him to talk.
Otherwise, says Levin, thousands of innocent people might die, and he argues their rights, the right not to be killed, trumps the rights of the terrorist not to be tortured. Levin says this moral calculus, more than any other consideration, should shape the debate over torture.
We have these ideas of medieval dungeons in the rack, where the point of the torture simply is to hurt the enemy of the government as much as possible for no other purpose. Whereas the way I see it, it is a regrettable but legitimate means of getting information very fast to save lives.
Critics say the ticking bomb scenario makes for an interesting classroom debate, but has little relation to the real world. David Cole is a professor of constitutional law at Georgetown University.
You don't know whether there's a bomb out there. You don't know whether the person you have in the room has sufficient information that can find, locate the bomb. And you don't know whether using coercive tactics against him will in fact lead him to tell the truth as opposed to just blurt something out to get you to stop torturing him.
A recent Gallup poll presented the ticking bomb scenario to a few hundred Americans. Most of those surveyed, nearly 60%, said no, they would not torture known terrorists, even if these terrorists knew details about future attacks in the U.S. But what about interrogation techniques that fall short of the legal definition of torture? Depriving suspects of sleep, for instance, or forcing them to stand in uncomfortable positions for hours at a time. Where exactly is the line between rough interrogation and torture?
You cross a line when you touch a person.
That's Richard Posner, a judge on the U.S. Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. He names a few tactics that he believes are perfectly acceptable to get someone to talk.
Playing loud music, shining bright lights, that's the old third degree, shining bright lights in the person's eye, you know, shouting at them, maybe telling lies. That's one thing. But when you cross the line, start hitting people, that's a line we don't want to cross.
The problem is that even that line is not so clear. The Convention Against Torture expressly prohibits interrogation methods that cause mental as well as physical pain. And that raises all kinds of difficult questions. Is it okay to threaten someone with torture or use techniques such as something called waterboarding? Again, David Cole.
It is essentially putting a person into a near-death situation in order to coerce them into talking. I think under any reasonable definition of torture, that would have to be included.
A majority of those surveyed by Gallup agree. 82% oppose the use of waterboarding, and 85% say U.S. interrogators should not use sexual humiliation, such as having female prisoners make physical contact with Muslim men. Some analysts say the U.S. should codify exactly which methods interrogators can and cannot use, but not everyone agrees.
Should we tell them in public what kinds of questions we're going to ask and how we're going to ask them if they're captured?
John Yoo is a former Justice Department lawyer who helped draft some of the controversial memos on interrogation practices.
So, for example, suppose we had a public debate and we said, well, the only things we're going to do are make people do manual labor and make them stand for long periods of time, and that's it. Well, then, if we capture an Al-Qaeda leader, they know that that's the only things we're going to do to them.
It is this need for secrecy that explains why so much of the debate over torture and coercion is taking place behind closed doors, just like the interrogations themselves. For Day to Day, I'm Eric Weiner. ¶¶
Thank you.